Happy Monday, everyone. It's time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, January 27th, 2020. I am reading to you from the studio located in Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. My name is Cindy. I'm glad you're listening. And let's look at today's weather and then the headlines. Excuse me if I have a little frog in my throat this morning. Today's weather, high of 29, low of 18. We were too supposed to have some fog before 8 a.m. And then the rest of the day will be cloudy skies with a north wind from 6 to 8 miles per hour. Our headlines is about the Sanders stop in Fort Dodge, which says Sanders talks climate change. And then a story about Fort Dodge native Cole rising through the ranks as Storm Lake police chief. And then a repeat article from Hometown Pride, typical for Mondays. All right. There is a picture of Bernie Sanders as he made a campaign stop at the Sanders field office in Fort Dodge at where there were 100 people. And then there's another picture of someone holding their phone doing a live stream from as Michael Moore's talking, I think. All right. Candidate joined by Ocasio-Cortez, Michael Moore in Fort Dodge. The Bernie Sanders campaign has two jobs to do, according to the United States Senator from Vermont, a candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination. Number one, together we are going to defeat the most dangerous president in the history of this country, the senator said to a group of dozens of supporters at the campaign's Fort Dodge office in the Snell Building on Sunday afternoon. The people of Iowa, the people of Vermont, the people of America do not believe we should have a president who is a pathological liar, someone who is running one of the most corrupt administrations in the history of our country, he continued. The second job his campaign has to resonate with the working families in America, people who in many cases are working longer hours for lower wages. Sanders said, we have an agenda which says if you work in America 40 hours a week, you're not going to live in poverty. About 110 people crowded into the fourth floor campaign field office in the Snell Building to meet Sanders, as well as Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the Democrat from New York, and filmmaker Michael Moore, who were both campaigning with the senator in Iowa this past weekend. Before introducing Sanders to the group, Ocasio-Cortez warned supporters to be wary of some criticisms of Sanders' campaign platform. There's a lot of boogeyman-type arguments that get put out there as though everything will just fall apart, she said. Let me tell you, they said that when the labor movement fought to have a 5-day work week and a 40-hour work week. They said our economy would fall apart. Last time we tried to raise the minimum wage, they said the economy would fall apart. Everything is always doom and gloom. But as we march toward justice ends up making us better. Sanders talked about climate change, saying that his administration would believe in science and listen to scientists and lead the world in combating climate change, noting that President Trump has rejected climate science and called climate change a hoax. When he does that, what he is doing is turning his back on the children of this country, on future generations, and leading them to a very dangerous future. Sanders said his campaign has introduced by far the most comprehensive climate change proposal ever introduced by any candidate, which is based on the Green New Deal legislative proposal. We will take on fossil fuel industry and tell them that their short-term profits are not more important than the future of this planet. Fort Dodge residents Don and Sharon Vogel are ardent supporters of Sanders and will be caucusing for the senator on February 3rd. I am primarily interested in health care, Don Vogel said. The Vogels who own Choice Printing in town, and Don Vogel said that the rising cost of health care has made it so he is unable to provide health care coverage to his employees. Something needs to happen with that, or none of us are going to have health care. Sharon Vogel said she likes that Sanders has a long resume serving in elected office and that through his campaigns, his message has not changed. During his remarks, Sanders touted the grassroots campaign strategy his campaign and staff have taken on, relying on small donors and bolstered by volunteers canvassing door to door. Misty Rebick, the Iowa State Director for Bernie Sanders' campaign, shared the efforts those volunteers have made in these final days before the caucuses. In the last 36 hours, you all have knocked on 102,000 doors here in Iowa. Not only that, during the time yesterday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., we were knocking on two doors every second. We are only able to do that because we have built the largest grassroots movement in the country, and it started here in Iowa back in 2016, and we're going to take it home on February 3rd. How Iowa votes on caucus night will impact the rest of the election. We are in the most consequential election in the modern history of America, he warned the crowd. The message today is that if we stand together and we don't allow Donald Trump and his friends to divide us, we stand together as a nation, we will not only defeat this very dangerous president, but we will transform this country and create an economy and a government that works for all of us, not just wealthy campaign contributors. And then on this following page, there is a picture of Alexandria Cortez talking. All right. Rising through the ranks. Fort Dodge native Cole becomes Storm Lake police chief. And there is a picture of Chris Cole being sworn in. He is a graduate of St. Edmunds. 25 years ago, Mark Prosser took a chance on Chris Cole, hiring him to join the Storm Lake Police Department. On February 1st, Cole, a 1992 graduate, St. Ed graduate, will replace Prosser as police chief for the department. There were a lot of applicants when I applied, and I'm very grateful that Chief Prosser took a chance on me, Cole said. I was only 19 when I was hired. I was really lucky to get to work and learn from great supervisors. Cole would later go on to earn degrees both from Iowa Central Community College and Bellevue University. He has held the position of police officer, detective, lieutenant, and assistant chief during his time with the department. The first stop in his career in law enforcement came in Dayton, with the help of current officers Luke Fleener and Chris O'Brien of the Webster County Sheriff's Office, along with Randy Steinkamp. When I was 16, I started working at Target, Cole said. During that time, I got to know Luke and Chris. We were both working there in loss prevention with Mark Gargano, the manager. Mark and I became good friends, and he later hired me as a loss prevention agent. I was working there and going to Iowa Central to study criminal justice. Luke, Chris, and Randy helped me get hired as part-time officer in Dayton, which is where Luke and Chris both started their careers. They thought it would be a great pathway to get into the police academy. I worked in Dayton on the weekends and went to school during the week, still working at Target in between classes. I eventually had to drop out of college to attend the police academy in 1994, and I tested for both Storm Lake and Fort Dodge. Cole admits that he really wanted to work in Fort Dodge, but was offered the position in Storm Lake by Prosser first. FDPD called me about a week after I moved to Storm Lake, but offered me a job, but I felt Storm Lake had taken a chance with me. I felt it would be wrong to jump ship after they had purchased me all new gear, and I've been there ever since. Much like his time before joining the Storm Lake Police Department, Cole found an interest in police work at an early age. When I was about 13 or 14, my father, who was a big influence for me, started taking me pheasant hunting with a group of friends. Many of them were police officers, sheriff's deputies, and state troopers. Each year, our group would hunt together on opening day. It was around that time I began to form a bond with those guys, and I began to consider a job in law enforcement. Like many other professional jobs, Cole has seen plenty of change in the 2+ decades working in the field. Pretty much everything is paperless now, he said. We used to handwrite everything when I first started. There is much better technology today. DNA, evidence, car cameras, body cameras, facial recognition, computers, cell phones. Sometimes those types of changes are hard for officers, but they are necessary for growth. With his firsthand experience on the department and years spent learning under Prosser and his fellow officers, Cole has some goals in mind for when he takes over in February. Internally, I think it's important to take care of the officers and staff. The patrol division are the guys and gals that are tirelessly out there day and night keeping the city safe. I want to continue to support them so they have the training and equipment they need to effectively do the job and do it safely. Externally, I would like to continue building relationships with the community members. We want to ensure that all of our community members have a voice and feel safe. We as law enforcement can't effectively do our jobs without help from the community. Community trust is very important. We build that trust through our community outreach and partnerships with people in the city. One of our goals is to connect with children at a young age. We want to humanize the badge so that more people know that we are here to help, not hinder. If we do it well, someday there will be an entire generation of people who value and respect police officers. Cole and his wife, Dr. Stacy Cole, live in Storm Lake. Dr. Cole is the superintendent of schools for Storm Lake and the former director of education services for Fort Dodge Community Schools. They have two children, Carson and Skyler. And on this page, there is a picture of Chris Cole with Chief Prosser, who he will be replacing. All right. Repeat article. Hometown Pride. And this says, committee works to improve Pleasant Valley community, building for the next generation. So this originally appeared, of course, in that Hometown Pride magazine. And there's a picture that's been taken underneath the Kenyon Road Bridge. And so this picture features Jameel Hamid, Terry Menke, Roger Porter, Sherry Washington, Helen Gully, and Merrill Leffler. And this was the committee behind having the murals painted on the bridge columns. From the playground equipment at H.C. Merriweather Park to the name itself, the Pleasant Valley Awareness Committee has made its mark in that segment of the Fort Dodge community. The park, located on 10th Avenue Southwest between 8th and 9th Streets in Pleasant Valley, used to be known as Mini Park. But Sherry Washington, president of the committee, said after some negative events that took place in the neighborhood, the committee felt it was time for a change. A formal dedication of H.C. Merriweather Park was held June 2018. The committee has also installed new swings and other equipment for children to enjoy. The committee formed in 2015. It was after a spree of random incidents throughout Fort Dodge, Washington recalled. Although most folks involved in the incidents did not even live in Pleasant Valley, the incidents seemingly flowed over into the Pleasant Valley neighborhood, magnifying increasing negativity in the community. One final incident was a cause for change, she said. Folks everywhere talked about the increasing incidents, but little action to address the issues. The last straw was a car chase through Pleasant Valley, which could have ended much worse than it did. After that, we knew awareness was much needed and long overdue, said Washington. So Washington reached out to Fort Dodge Mayor Matt Bemrick to set up a meeting with city officials. The meeting was successful, and out of it began Pleasant Valley Awareness. The first meeting was held at the Fort Dodge Public Library. The turnout was pretty good. As time progressed, others joined in the meetings. Some of the first conversations were about safety, reaching into the neighborhood to address concerns, better street lighting, street conditions, the old staircase on the 14th Street Hill, street flooding, and community dinners. And of course, the current members of the committee are Jameel Hamid, Helen Gully, Charles Mosley, Terry Menke, Mary Leffler, Jessica Moffat, Lori Branderhorst, Cameron Nelson, Ann Meyer, Brett Nelson, Roger Porter, Bill Douglas, Desi Emerson, and Washington. Community is important for Pleasant Valley Awareness, Washington said. We have a great group of folks. Laughter is a must. Although our backgrounds are very diverse, our community goals are the same. The diversity adds many great outlooks for our events. Washington said in 2018, Leffler introduced the crawfish boil to Juneteenth, which is also known as Freedom Day. It was a first for many, Washington said. Folks are still talking about it. Everyone brings their own unique spin to the group, and it works. She added, it's a blessing to be a part of this group. Years later, we're still planning and working together for the present and the future. Some of the committee's planned projects include a mural under the Kenyon Road Bridge, More park updates and a community cleanup. Washington said she's been so grateful for the members of the committee, and she was complimentary of Fort Dodge City Councilman Terry Menke. Councilman Terry Menke is one in a million. We're unsure how he finds the time to do it all, but he does. He is also an original member from day one. Washington credited the city's Park and Recreation Forestry Director for her help with H.C. Merriweather Park. She worked overtime on the park, the renaming, and events. Washington said she's a hard worker and always has a lending hand. Washington said Jessica Moffat and her father, Merrill, make a good team. Jessica and Merrill are always there for anything, she said. You don't have to say it twice. They put in their best effort to make it work. Coming early, leaving late. She appreciates community members Helen Gully, Charles Mosley, Jameel Hamid, Desi Anderson, Amerison, and Bill Douglas. They are all rooted in Pleasant Valley. It is very important to each one of them to see the community grow. Each one works extra hard for their families and goes the extra mile for the community. Happy to have them a part of Pleasant Valley Awareness. Always there to volunteer for anything needed. Very passionate people with a heart for the community. Washington said Brent Nelson, the head coach for the Triton rugby team, is a nice fit for the committee. He is dedicated, Washington said, cleaning up the community streets and yards with the rugby team, anything to help. He's a great team player, hard worker, always looking to improve or help any way needed. According to Washington, Cameron Nelson is the funniest on the committee. He can find humor in anything. Cameron has a heart for helping people, whether it's standing in freezing weather giving gifts to children or emceeing a program, whatever it takes. Washington credits State Representative Ann Meyer, Republican from Fort Dodge, for her continued support. She takes time to listen to everyone, Washington said, always in attendance and willing to help where needed. She is a great addition to the committee. Washington is happy to have Fort Dodge Police Chief Roger Porter on the committee. Chief Roger Porter is a wonderful person. He would like to see the community in a better place. He's optimistic and always there with a helping hand. As the committee looks to tackle new projects, Washington said she's all ears on how to improve the community. We want to work with the community, she said, hearing the comments and suggestions on how to improve the neighborhood building for the next generation. Okay. Front page is done. So let's look back in history. The picture today is from 2005, and it features a painting done by Fort Dodge Senior High Art Instructor, and I might add, fellow hallway roomie with me, Richard J. Hansen, who won the 2004 National Watercolor Society Purchase Award. The picture was entitled, or the painting, Home Sweet Home, of a homeless man sleeping in a car. It was published in the February edition of Watercolor Magic, a nationally circulated publication. The painting accompanied the accent column by then-editor Walt Stevens, and Hansen is still creating art. Yes, he is. You might be able to find some of it if you stalk him on Facebook. The poll this week is, are you concerned about the coronavirus? And you can find those answers on Sunday. Well, first of all, you can answer yourself at www.messengernews.net and then check it out on Sundays. See who agrees or disagrees with you or thinks like you do. Okay, today is the 27th day of 2020. There are 339 days left. So let's see, on 1981, President Ronald Reagan and wife Nancy greeted the 52 former American hostages that were released by Iran at the White House. Way back in 1756, Mozart was born in Austria. 1880, Thomas Edison received a patent for his electric incandescent lamp. 1943, some 50 bombers struck Wilhelmshaven in the first all-American air raid against Germany in World War II. In 1945, during World War II, Soviet troops liberated the Nazi concentration camps Auschwitz and Birkenau in Poland. 1967, astronauts Virgil, Gus Grissom, Ed White, and Roger Chaffee died in a flash fire during the test aboard their Apollo spacecraft. 1973, the Vietnam Peace Accords were signed in Paris. 10 years ago, acknowledging that change has not come fast enough, President Barack Obama vowed in his State of the Union address to get jobless millions back to work while fighting for ambitious overhauls of healthcare, energy, and education. 5 years ago, European leaders gathered in Poland to mark the 70th anniversary of that Soviet liberation of Auschwitz. Amid tensions between Russia and the West over Ukraine, Russian President Putin stayed away, sending his chief of staff instead. 1 year ago, Black Panther took the top prize at the Screen Actors Guild Awards, topping the leading Oscar nominees Roma and The Favorite. Thought for today is from Wallace Stevens, who was an American poet and author from 1879 to 1955, and the thought is this: the most beautiful thing in the world is, of course, the world itself. I saw a picture of some northern lights the other day, and oh my goodness, that triggers that for me. Hope I can see them someday in person, maybe. All right, community calendar. It's a Monday. That means the Rotary Club is meeting at the Willow Ridge Golf Course at 11:45. In Fort Dodge at noon, at the First United Methodist Church will be the Al-Anon Non-Smoking Club. The AA Al-Anon Club in Fort Dodge will meet at noon and 7 at 12 North 7th Street. Webster City All Addictions Anonymous meets from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the Webster City Trinity Lutheran Church. There is the weekly Lion's Den Dance from 6 to 9 p.m. at the former Isaac Walton Lodge on Expo Drive. There will be a variety of music, bring your own beverage, snack, and a $5 donation is requested. We have the Humboldt Dakota City Noon Kiwanis meeting at 6 p.m. at Vinny's Barbecue in Dakota City. Bingo is tonight at the Fort Museum and Opera House. Doors open at 5, early bird start at 6:30. Fort Dodge Duplicate Bridge Club plays tonight at 6:30 p.m. at Citizen Central. The Badger Lions Club will be meeting tonight at 7 p.m. in their community center. Public is always welcome, and you can contact Roger Curtis at 545-4487 if you have some more questions. Fort Dodge's Women's AA meeting is tonight at 7 p.m. at the YW. Fort Dodge Choral Society practice will be practicing tonight from 7:30 to 9:30 at Grace Lutheran Church on South 9th. There is an AA open meeting in Manson tonight at the St. Thomas Catholic Church at 7:30. And an NA Young People's Group that meets at 8 p.m. at the Humboldt County Courthouse in Dakota City. Today's editorial. Iowa Power Farming Show starts Tuesday. The event is the third largest indoor farm show. What organizers say is the third largest indoor agriculture equipment show in the upper Midwest, kicks off Tuesday and continues through Thursday at the Iowa Event Center in Des Moines. The 2020 Iowa Power Farming Show features nearly 8 acres of indoor exhibit space from 88 new exhibitors. Established in 1910, the Iowa Power, wow, that's been around a long time. The Iowa Power Farming Show consists of 740 companies, not only from across the United States, but from several Canadian provinces. Many new exhibitors will be among the companies showcasing products. The Pure Ag Show will feature the best ag has to offer, from big iron precision, aerial imaging, livestock production, data management, and more. There will be several educational opportunities with a powerful lineup of seminars, and back again for 2020 is the Ag Tech Innovation Competition at 2 p.m. Wednesday in the Hy-Vee Hall. The location in central Iowa means growers in the Hawkeye State can see the next big things in agriculture without incurring heavy travel expense. The Iowa Power Farming Show is owned and managed by the Iowa-Nebraska Equipment Dealers Association. The 2020 incarnation of the Iowa Power Farming Show just might be turn out to be the grandest ever. Don't miss the opportunity to be part of this exceptionally important event. Okay. Let's see. I'm going to read an article before the obituaries. It is an AP article, but it's about the flooding and the Missouri River. So I think it's worth staying abreast of, so to speak. So it says, four Missouri River states unite to try to limit flooding. Pool funds to pay for a $400,000 study. Now this comes out of Lincoln, Nebraska. Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, and Missouri are joining forces for a study that will look for ways the states can limit flooding along the Missouri River and give them information about how wetter weather patterns could require changes in the way the U.S. government manages the basin's reservoirs. The states are pooling their money to pay for half of a $400,000 study with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to measure how much water flows down the Missouri. The states hope to present a united front to federal officials to gain more influence over how the river is managed after the devastating floods of 2011 and 2019. We've got to look at the data, but it's certainly possible that we're going to see more wet years, Republican Governor of Nebraska Ricketts said in a recent media briefing. We need to collect the data first, and then we can address the Corps. Officials from the state plan to meet next month to decide how to proceed. A lot of the data the Corps uses to manage the Missouri River is outdated and doesn't account for the two historic floods over the last decade, said Jeff Fassett, director of the Nebraska Department of Natural Resources. The Corps did not respond to requests for an interview. We need to be factoring in new information as we look forward, Fassett said. Nobody knows whether this is the new normal. What if 2023 looks like 2019? We better be prepared. The effort comes as higher global temperatures are causing glaciers to melt into the oceans and producing extreme weather conditions that are more intense and destructive than before. Fassett says the states also want to identify pinch points on the river that could cause water buildup during a flood. He pointed to a crossing at Nebraska Highway 2 where the river spilled over its levees and covered Interstate 29 last year. Crews responded by raising and lengthening the bridge to let more water flow underneath. States that work together tend to carry more sway with the federal government because they don't make conflicting requests, said Tim Hall, the Hydrology Resources Coordinator for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Hall said that partnership is similar to a group of Upper Mississippi River states that joined forces in 1981 to mitigate flooding. It's a lot easier than one state trying to negotiate with the Corps, Hall said. It can be done, but it's more challenging. The partnership also encourages states to share data and not work against one another. In the big picture, we all want to accomplish the same thing. The Missouri is the longest river in North America, running from western Montana through the Dakotas and touching Nebraska, Iowa, and Kansas, before cutting across Missouri and entering the Mississippi River at St. Louis. We Lewis and Clark people. Fans know that, huh? The state it touches once had a coalition known as the Missouri River Association of States and Tribes, but it eventually disbanded after Iowa and Nebraska withdrew amid a dispute with Montana over how to manage the river. Nebraska and Iowa wanted more water released from upstream reservoirs earlier in the year to prevent summer flooding, but Montana was concerned about effects on wildlife and recreation during the drought years. The new four-state coalition would focus on flood mitigation. And there is a picture from last October still, with a barn just sitting in the middle of floodwaters. Very old barn, and it's actually kind of a pretty picture, but sitting in the middle of water, that's not good. All right. Let me remind you that you are listening to The Messenger on IRIS, the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. You can hear us daily at 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. for The Messenger. If you have any questions or comments about our program or any other IRIS program, give us a call at 515-243-7255. 6833. And now we'll turn to the obituaries. We have four today. Four kind of lengthy ones. Eldon Hunt. Eldon H. Hunt, 86, of Fort Dodge, passed away on Sunday, January 26th, at the Bickford Cottages. Funeral services will be held 11 a.m. on Wednesday, January 29th, at St. Paul's Lutheran Church. Burial will be at North Lawn Cemetery. A visitation will be on Tuesday from 4 to 7 at Laufensweiler's. He is survived by his four daughters, Jan Coy of Plainfield, Pam, spouse John Nelson of Fountain Hills, Arizona, and their son Michael, Lori, spouse Frank Ludgate of Bettendorf, Iowa, and their children Daniel, spouse Gretchen Ludgate, and Marie, spouse Eric Burton, Kim, spouse Ted Vaughn of Fort Dodge, and their children Amber, spouse Chad Kelly, Courtney, spouse Bo Darrow, and Tyler Vaughn. Five great-grandchildren, Tatum Turner, Tommy Eddy, and Grace, brother Doyle Hunt, and sister Marion P-T-A-C-E-K. He was preceded in death by his parents, Joseph and Margaret Carson's Hunt, wife Jeanette in 2018, and sisters Dolores and Eleanor. Eldon Herman Hunt was born on September 23, 1933, in Carroll. He attended school in Glidden and graduated from Glidden High School in 1951. Eldon then helped on the family farm. On September 25th, he was united in marriage to Jeanette Clark. They made their home in Glidden and later moved to Fort Dodge. Eldon worked for Omar Bread Company and then Oberg Dairy as a delivery man. Eldon then started G&E Dairy, which he owned and operated with George Niemeyer. Later, he worked for Wells Blue Bunny Ice Cream until his retirement. He spent countless hours volunteering his time and gifts at St. Paul Lutheran Church. Eldon adored his wife of 62 years, his daughters, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. He especially enjoyed attending his grandchildren's activities as a faithful Dodger fan. Eldon enjoyed woodworking, caring for his yard, and was an avid Chicago Cubs fan. Memorials may be left to the St. Paul Lutheran Church. From Webster City, Trudy Helton. Trudy I. Helton passed away on January 21st, 2020. Trudy was born on March 29th, 1947, and raised on a farm outside of Webster City, where she developed many of her caretaking gifts as the oldest of seven siblings. She graduated from Webster City High School in 1965. On April 1st, 1966, she married Melvin Butch Helton, and they remained married for almost 53 years before Butch passed away in early 2019. A celebration of life will be held at the Bowman Funeral Home in Webster City on Saturday, February 1st at 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. In lieu of flowers and memorial gifts, the family asks that everyone please consider a donation to the organization supporting those with Alzheimer's, dementia, or autism. Trudy is survived by her three children, Tammy, spouse John Doran of Ankeny, Melody, spouse Mark Fielder of Webster City, and Chris, spouse Kate Helton of Fort Dodge. She is survived by her six grandchildren, who she absolutely adored, Haley Doran, Brendan Doran, Alec Doran, Dylan Fielder, Drew Fielder, and Emily Helton. Trudy leaves behind five siblings to mourn her loss, Lorinda Inman, Elena Corner, Violetta Hall, Gwenna Jacobson, and Tim Studley. She was preceded in death by her parents, George and Irma Studley, her husband, Butch, and her youngest brother, Tom. From Otho, Harl Stevenson. Harl Stevenson, age 72, died Friday, January 24th, 2020, at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home in Fort Dodge. Funeral services will be held 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, January 30th at Lamp Funeral Home in Lake City with a private family burial following. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 Wednesday at Lamp Funeral Home in Lake City. Harl is survived by his children, Alyssa Stevenson of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Andrea Albee and her children, Corey Lennox and Brayton of Fort Dodge, and Adam Stevenson of Badger. his beloved dog Elsie, sisters Kathy Stevenson of Fort Dodge and Connie Falk of Rockwell City, sister-in-laws Patty Stevenson of Lake City and Diane Stevenson of Littleton, Colorado, and many nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his wife, Diane Stevenson, parents Leroy and Marianne Stevenson, brothers Denny and Bill Stevenson, sister Susan Hammond, and brother-in-law Mark Falk. Harl Leroy Stevenson was born on July 19, 1947, in Fort Dodge, to Leroy and Marianne Rischel Stevenson. On May 17, 1980, Harl married Diane Himrod in Humboldt. He worked for Iowa Beef and an OTR truck driver at Electrolux until his retirement in 2008. From Palmer, we have Leo W. Francis, age 81. Passed away Saturday, January 25th at the Paula J. Baber House in Fort Dodge. Funeral services will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, January 29th. At the Resurrection of Our Lord Catholic Church in Pocahontas, with the Father Craig Collison and Monsignor Michael Cernett officiating. Burial will be in Calvary Cemetery in Pocahontas. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 Tuesday, January 28th, at the Powers Funeral Home in Pocahontas. A prayer service will be held at 7 p.m. Tuesday at the funeral home. Leo William Francis was born April 23, 1938, at Fort Dodge. He was the son of Donald and Eldora Alleg Francis. He graduated from Palmer High School in 1956. He served in the U.S. Army Reserve. On December 28, 1957, Leo was united in marriage to Levon Nedved at SS Peter and Paul Catholic Church in Pocahontas. Leo worked for Walner Construction for several years and then began farming, first with his dad and later with his sons Alan and Brian. His final harvest was in the fall of 2019. Leo was a lifetime member of the St. Joseph Catholic Church in Palmer, where he served as lay minister. Upon the closing of the church, Leo and Levon joined the Resurrection of Our Lord Catholic Church in Pocahontas. Leo served on the Palmer Co-op Elevator Board and was a trustee in Lincoln Township for 35 years. In his younger days, Leo loved to go fox hunting with family and friends. He loved to attend all of the ball games his kids, grandkids, and great-grandkids took part in. In his later years, Leo loved having packets of fruit snacks in his shirt pocket for his great-grandkids to find. Survivors include his wife of 62 years, Levon, children Alan, spouse Deb Francis of Palmer, Brian, spouse Joanne Francis of Pocahontas, Roger Francis of Pocahontas, William Francis of Hull, Connie, spouse Scott McDonough of Sac City, 16 grandchildren, 15 great-grandchildren who loved him dearly, a sister, Kay, Merrill Heinze of Manson, and a brother, Harold, spouse Joanne Francis of Pocahontas. Leo was preceded in death by his parents, a grandson, Travis Francis, and a daughter-in-law, Sandra Francis. Powers Funeral Home in Pocahontas is handling arrangements for online condolences and obituaries. You may visit powersfuneralhome.net. And then the announcements section from Gunderson's today. At 3 p.m., there will be a service for Verlin Emil Pagel, and that's at the Crossway Evangelical Free Church. And this morning at 10 a.m., Dean Scharf. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Monday. Oh, yeah, and the funeral at 10 a.m. then tomorrow morning at Gunderson's. And they are in service to Henrietta D. Brown. At Laufenswiler's, John Condon's funeral is today at 10 a.m., beginning at Laufenswiler and then proceeding to the church, Corpus Christi. Eldon Hunt, that funeral will be Wednesday at 11 o'clock at St. Paul's with visitation Tuesday from 4 to 7. Greg A. Spencer, age 69, that funeral will be Friday at 10:30 a.m., visitation Thursday from 4 to 7. Jeff Bachhoven, age 60, that memorial service will be this coming Saturday at 2 p.m. with visitation 1 hour prior. Daryl Becker, age 92, private services will be held later. Angela McLeod, age 45, private services later. Virginia Kelly, age 100, memorial services planned for a later date. Okay. Sorry about the paper rattling, but we have to switch gears. All right. Sports. Well, of course, if you could see the headlines on this sports page, it's big, and it says this one hurts, and we won't necessarily read the article, but it does show a big picture of Kobe Bryant and his daughter. And the article, of course, just talks about how everyone is so stunned by their death in the helicopter. Also on the front page of the sports page, it shows Megan Gustafson as they retire her jersey in Carver Hawkeye Arena. And so that ceremony took place over the weekend. And so we will go to the hot corner, going back in history a little bit on this date. Way back in 1937, Tris Speaker and Cy Young were elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. 1973, UCLA, led by Bill Walton, set an NCAA record for consecutive victories with 61 in a row. And that happened when they played Notre Dame. 1982, Jeff Houston of the Cleveland Cavaliers handed out 27 assists, two short of the NBA record, and scored 24 points in a 110-106 victory over Golden State. 1991, the New York Giants survived the closest Super Bowl ever when Scott Norwood's 47-yard field goal attempt with 8 seconds left went wide. So the Giants won their second Super Bowl then in 5 years. 2001, Jennifer Capriata upsets three-time winner Martina Hingis to win the Australian opener and her first Grand Slam. 2007, Serena Williams won her third Australian Open, beating Maria Sharapova. Williams wins her eighth and most improbable Grand Slam. So today, for sports on TV, there is hockey. 7 o'clock tonight, Tampa Bay at Dallas, and on NBC Sports Network, on the Hockey Network at 9 is the All-Star Challenge. Men's college basketball. Let's see. CBS, Lehigh at American at 6. ESPN, North Carolina at NC State at 6, followed by Kansas at Oklahoma State. Well, that will be interesting to see who's playing for Kansas after that brouhaha last week. ESPNU, we have Florida A&M at Norfolk State. And on the Big Ten Network, Wisconsin at Iowa. Let's see, women's college basketball, Big Ten. They will be playing Minnesota at Indiana at 5. On ESPN2, you can see U.S. at UConn. On SEC Network, Auburn at Kentucky at 6. Pro basketball, NBA, 8 p.m. is Houston at Utah. Oh, that's right. This is the week of the Super Bowl, so they have Super Bowl opening night, whatever that means, at 6 p.m. on Fox Sports 1 and the National Football League Network. You can watch some skiing today at noon on the NBC Sports Network, the FIS Alpine World Cup, and the Australian tennis is going on now. And yes, you can start at 1 o'clock on ESPN2, then you can switch to the Tennis Network at 6, and then back to ESPN2 at 8. Okay, and I already said, I think, that the Iowa at Wisconsin games tonight. Locally, we have Dodgers versus Mason City for girls. The wrestling team is at Mason City. The boys basketball is playing Mason City. And the Gales are at Peyton Sherdan. And Magic Johnson's quote of the day about the Kobe Death says, I thought he was invincible. Yeah, but none of us are we? None of us. Okay, a little hoop scoop. Okay, tonight, St. Edmund's girls will begin a five-game road trek. So they go to Peyton-Sherdan and play at 7:45. And then they play a conference doubleheader tomorrow at Algona at 6:45. So starting tonight probably will be Kelly Kirsten Jr., Cambry McBride Sr., Emma Neverman Sr., Aubrey Bemrick Jr., and Leah Neverman Jr. The Hawks tonight. Let's see. Wisconsin has a record of 12-8, 5-4 in the league, and Iowa 14-5, 5-3 in the league. They tip off at 7:30. So the bottom line is that Iowa looks for its fifth straight conference win against Wisconsin. Iowa's last Big Ten loss came against Nebraska Cornhuskers. Yeah, that was kind of crazy. 76-70 on January 7th. Wisconsin fell 70-51 at Purdue just last Friday. And, of course, everybody's watching Luka Garza, Joe Weiskamp, Ryan Kreiner, because they've accounted for 58% of the team's scoring this season. So, everybody's kind of getting into the Hawkeyes. Fort Dodge, tonight their hoop scoop. The Fort Dodge hosts Mason City in a rescheduled CIML-Iowa Conference doubleheader. The tip is set for 6:15 for the girls. And then on Tuesday, the Fort Dodge Senior High Boys host Johnston at 7:45. Probably starting tonight for the girls is Tori Bennett, sophomore, Aaliyah Palmer, sophomore, Cheyenne Miller Hamid, junior, Tristan Doster, junior, and Haley Wills, sophomore. Last time out, Fort Dodge snapped a five-game losing skid with a 57-26 victory over Marshalltown last Friday. And Mason City is coming off a 78-62 setback to Southeast Polk last Friday. All right. I was trying to read about the boys, but it doesn't really... Boys probables. Here we go. Tonight, the probables for the boys. Ale Thorson, senior. Tyson Kershaw, senior. Montarius Abrams-Altman, sophomore. Avery Martin, Jr., and Desan Clayton, Jr. Those are our probable starters. Last time out, Dodgers dropped their 12th consecutive game, falling to Marshalltown last Friday. And so we'll have to see how that goes tonight. How about the MAT? Fort Dodge MAT. Fourth-ranked Class 3A Fort Dodge heads to Mason City to meet the Mohawks. JV match starts at 6:30 with varsity at 7:30. So here's your weight lineup. 106 Max Bishop, freshman. 113 Lane Cowell, junior. 120 Drake Ayala, junior. 126 Carson Taylor, senior. 132 Brooks Cowell, senior. 138 Drayson Phillips, junior. 145 Brandon Mills, senior. He's a senior. 152 Cody Cook, junior. 160 Savion Wheat, senior. 170, Dylan Zimmerman, Jr., 182, Austin Lee, Sr., 195, Caden Lynch, sophomore, 220, Rocco Jolly, Jr., 285, Colton Munter, Sr. Last time out, Drake Ayala, Carson Taylor, and Drayson Phillips all claimed titles last Saturday at the Rick Caldwell Invitational, and Dodgers finished second there at the Waverly Shell Rock. Dodgers have 9 ranked wrestlers. So we'll see how they do. Okay, let's see. Triton men were in an indoor invite over the weekend at Brookings, South Dakota. A total of 19 new national qualifiers were earned for the Iowa Central's men and women's track and field teams during that invitational. The Triton men placed second overall. Had 13 new qualifiers, while the women, who were fifth overall, had 6. The ICC men also set 9 new AT marks, and the women had 7. Let's see. Drake fell over the weekend, Drake men, and the Panthers women were toppled over the weekend. So those are just a little bit of updates. All right. Well, how about that really brings us to the end of the messenger, except for the weather, which I will recap in a little bit. There is an article about them still looking for survivors in that Turkey earthquake over the weekend. So that's always a tragedy. All right, how about some lighthearted jokes today? This, of course, I brought my Reader's Digest. So maybe if you have read this issue, you'll have forgotten the jokes. My 3-year-old grandson asked his mother whether his younger brother used to be in her stomach. "Yes," she said. "Well, how'd he get there?" he asked. "I'll tell you when you're older." "Just tell me this," he said, concerned. "Did you eat him?" Oh, isn't that what kids say? Would love for 1 second of my adult life to be as amped as I did as a child, knowing I had $5 to spend at the Scholastic Book Fair. Apartment life often means little privacy. I realized that one day when my kitten was running around my bedroom, climbing onto shelves and into the dresser as I was getting ready for work. I finally exploded at the kitchen. "You'd better sit down. You're getting on my nerves." A second later, a voice from upstairs responded, "Okay." I suppose they thought she was hearing foot feet. Mother was a health food nut. Much to Dad's chagrin, she was always adding wheat germ and other supplements to his food. "You'll live to be 100 if you keep eating like this," she enthused. "No, I won't," he muttered as he readied himself for another spoonful of fortified oatmeal. "But it's sure gonna seem like it." That's not so funny to me, but oh well. As we drove into Traverse City, Michigan, we were greeted by a billboard advertising a restaurant in town. Its claim, "Steaks bigger than the 8th Street pothole." That's kind of cute. All right. Let's see. How about, there's a section in the Reader's Digest that always talks about quotes from people. Sometimes they're kind of strange. Sometimes they're kind of thought-provoking. So this is from Mindy Kaling. She's a comedian. "Don't be scared if you don't do things in the right order. I didn't think I'd have dessert before breakfast today, but hey, turns out that way I wouldn't change a thing." How about Ken Follett? Ever read any of his work? "Hard work should be rewarded by good food." This is from Glenn Close. "If we are to remain a free and viable society, we need to spend less time looking at screens and more time looking into each other's eyes." Isn't that interesting? And she's an actor. This is from Larry Page, some entrepreneur. Don't know that I know who he is. "It is often easier to make progress on mega ambitious dreams. Since no one else is crazy enough to do it, you have little competition." This is from Prince William, Duke of Cambridge. "Grief can change your outlook. You don't ever forget the shock, the sadness, and the pain. But I do not believe that grief changes who you are. Grief, if you let it, will reveal who you are. It can reveal depths that you did not know you had. The startling weight of grief can burst any bubble of complacency in how you live your life and help you to live up to the values you espouse." Okay, this story is called Everyday Miracles. I think they're a section of short ones. And the first one's entitled The Bus Crash Angel. The phone rings. I wait for an answering machine to get it, but for some reason it's not picking up. I exhale annoyed because I know the call is either going to be my wife, Susan. She's the only one who receives call on the home line. And she left to take Alice to school 10 minutes ago. Or it's the latest of 300 attempts to sell me something I have no interest in. Hello, I say in an edge in my voice. Daddy, it's me. It's Alice, my 12-year-old daughter. Mommy was just in a car accident. My heart stops and then begins pounding. Are you all right? Yes. Is Mommy? A deep sob. I don't know. I don't think so. Come quick. I sprint a few blocks to what looks like a shoot for a disaster movie. Fire engines, police cars, ambulances are randomly parked in the street. Helicopters circle. A city bus is on the wrong side of the road, and in front of it are the smashed remains of Susan's car. Susan is pinned under the dashboard. There is no front windshield, no front end for that matter. Alice is standing on the corner crying, covered in tiny shards of glass, but uninjured, inconceivable. Susan isn't so lucky, but she is alive. It turns out she's broken nearly every bone in her body and will spend almost 3 months in the hospital. Alice was crying. The woman said, "Let's pray together." More than 2 years later, Susan and I were at an event at our synagogue celebrating Martin Luther King Jr. Our temple's cantor and musical director, Danny, rushed up to us. He said excitedly, "There's a woman here tonight from one of the church choirs who you have to meet." He returned with an African-American woman with a bright, glowing smile. She told us she lived in the apartment building by where the wreck had happened that morning, and she rushed to the street, still in her bathrobe, saw Alice, and asked her if that was her mom, and asked her to pray. Sweet, innocent Allison looked at the woman wearing a cross and said, "Okay, but you should know I'm Jewish." And the woman smiled and said, "We're all the same." Alice told her she needed to call me, but her backpack was in her phone, so the woman lent Alice her phone. After the accident, she said she had continued to pray. We had our picture taken. As we were saying goodbye, she hugged us warmly. Then she asked them their names as they left, and the husband said Doug, and the wife said Susan, and the woman put her hand over her heart and said, "Oh my goodness, my name is Susan Douglas." Wow. That brings us to the end of today's Fort Dodge's Messenger, but let's look at the week of weather real quick. I've got about 30 seconds. It looks like it's pretty much the same. Cloudy, 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 cloudy with highs around 30, 32, 34. And we're finally going to see some sun on Saturday and Sunday with a little bit of warmth. So I thank you for listening to us at Friendship Haven. We thank you for listening, and we thank Friendship Haven for giving Iris a home. And again, we thank you for listening to Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service. Wishing you all a dream to bless and a star to guide and a very, very good Monday.